Okay, our next presenter will be Nick Bateman, seasonal occurrence of Lepidopteran pests of soybean and the implications for the natural refuge.
Thank you. I'm currently a PhD student under Angus Catchott and Jeff Gore at Mississippi State University. And my project is revolved around soybeans and when insects, the stink bugs and all the defoliators and all that show up and what planting dates are most vulnerable. But we wanted to look at this since the project's also looking at the potential for BT beans and when they'd be most valuable in Mississippi. We also wanted to look at, you know, how these numbers play as far as looking at the natural refuge for cotton. So the cotton boll worm, Helicoverpacea, it's one of the largest pests there are, or one of the major pests in the Mid-South for cotton. The eggs are laid individually and hatch 3 to 5 days later, and the larvae typically go through five instars over about a two-week period. They feed on off-rooting structures, typically starting in the terminal and working their way down the plant to the bolls. So BT cotton was first approved for commercial use in 95. This cotton was Bolgard by Monsanto Company. It had a single toxin in it, Cry1AC. In 2003 and 2005, we got Bolgard 2 and Wide Strike, which were dual gene cottons and had two cryotoxins. So now we have some newer technology being the Twin Link and some third generation technology being Wide Strike 3 that is including this VIP3A gene along with the Cry1AC and Cry1F. So when we had the single gene cotton, the first generation of BT cotton, we had a refuge. It was either 5% unsprayed, 20% sprayed, or 5% embedded. But with the introduction of dual gene cotton, we went to a natural refuge system where the surrounding landscape was considered the refuge instead of having to actually plant or spray a refuge. So when we look at how these different crops, how bollworms are coming through these different crops, we see that the C4 host play a large role, and this is probably rather the largest host they have. And we see this diazine, which is what is used to determine if they're coming out of soybeans, and it's pretty accurate. We see that soybeans are playing a fairly large role in the later planting dates, or later in the season. So dual gene cottons in Mississippi, we're basically planting 100%. It's very hard to find some non-BT cotton. And we can see that since 2004, we've had a steady increase. And a lot of this, the reason it probably wasn't 100% from 2004 till now, is due to seed availability. So acres of soybeans that get infested with corn earworms, we see that it's a fairly small amount in most years. Now, we did have a pretty good peak between 2008 and probably 2013, but for the most part, we hang around that 20-25% mark of soybeans being infested with corn earworm. And we look at the acres treated. We're not treating a substantial amount of acres. I mean, 20% out of 2.3 million acres isn't a very large number. So the objective of this study was to determine the temporal and spatial distribution of Azalea and soybeans and the impact on the natural refuge for cotton. So the materials and methods, I did surveys from 2013 till presently, and I'm also going to do them next year. Over those 3 years, we did about 70 fields statewide in both the Hills and Delta regions of Mississippi. And this was spread out across all planting dates. I started in March whenever the first beans were getting planted when they hit R1, mid-April to early May, and I went all the way till September, October. But we sampled weekly doing 100 sweeps per field, from R1 to R7. And I'm going to be talking about early normal and late planting dates. These early planting dates, I'm considering that everything planted before May 1st. Our normal planting window is usually between May 1st and June 1st. And this late window is going to be anything after June 1st. And I use Proc Freak and Proc Means and SAS to analyze this data. So this is over all 3 years across all planting dates. And we see that, 95% or just a touch over 95% of the samples had zero corn earworms in them. I had a hard time finding corn earworm in soybeans. And we see that 1 to 18, this is based on 100 sweeps. So a quarter threshold, we see that it showed up about 5% of the time, but it's over threshold. I never reached it. When we look at early planting dates, we see the same trend, but even more of them showed up with zero, even more of the samples had zero corn earworms in them. And we move and we look at all the samples across sample date to see kind of when this peak showed up. And we're basing this on corn earworms per acre. We see that the peak was right before September. So when we look at normal planting dates, we see basically the same thing. Once again, it's over 95% of the samples had zero corn earworms in them. And the peak sort of falls in that same window between mid-July and August. In late planting dates, now we did see more corn earworms show up in beans in general, but once again, we never reached threshold. And we see that it had roughly the same peak between July and August. So when we break down the percent of acres we have planted, this red line represents 45% of the acres that were planted before May 1st. So these fall between March 15th through May 1st. So this is roughly about, out of the 2.3 million acres, it's roughly just over a million acres. So the mean corn earworm, theoretically, based on my numbers, that could be coming out of these soybeans is about 6.17 million corn earworms. When we look at normal planting date, this number magnifies up to 76.8 million. In these late planted soybeans, it's 4.23, but it's a small amount of acres. This is also the same time period where my data is showing that BT soybeans are going to be the most valued in Mississippi, these late planting dates. So when we look at a summary of all of this, we see that the normal planting dates had a lot more corn earworm than anything else. But when we corrected it and looked at it for the percent of positive samples I had for corn earworm, we see that the late soybeans, about 50% of the times we could find corn earworm in the samples. These were really low numbers, and we see that the corrected corn earworm larvae was only 2.12. This normal planting date is whenever most of these corn earworms are showing up. So in conclusion, soybeans are playing a role in the national refuge. We know that for sure. But these later planting dates where we're really thinking that BT beans would have the most value to Mississippi, there's a considerably lower number of corn earworms in these planting dates compared to the normal and early planting dates. So currently, Dr. Caprio at Mississippi State University, this is his model. This is a model for corn and about the durability of the technology. And we see with the 20% refuge, this orange line, we have about 25 years durability. But we're going to put my data inside or in this model too and see how it changes it. And with that, I'll take any questions.
You didn't come out and say directly that your conclusion regarding natural refuge and soy is that it won't have an impact?
Well, we do know that soybeans are having an impact on the natural refuge. We do know that they're a host for these corn earworms, but we're thinking that these later planted beans, where the BT beans will be the most value, the soybeans are not playing near as large of a role as things like weedy host and grain sorghum, that kind of stuff. So we're thinking that if you put BT beans, that would be a good fit there and not mess with the natural refuge as much as planting that normal or early window whenever you have your highest populations of corn earworm.
Do you have time for questions? If not, let's thank our speaker.